You know, if I could play the song Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins right now and remix it in some way to include lyrics about the Mariners, I would. I would do that. I can't play that song and broadcast it on my own platform. I think that something with copyrights would prevent me from doing that. And I can't remix music because I don't have that ability. If you don't know what Danger Zone is, it's the song, the iconic song from the 1986 classic film Top Gun. Point is, he says Danger Zone a lot in the song because Maverick is entering the Danger Zone. The point is, the Mariners are entering the Danger Zone. They're in a Danger Zone right now. They're still in first place, which is kind of insane because the AL West is just not good. But they've slipped a little bit from being the second best offense in baseball and absolutely cooking. And they are 3-7 in their last 10. They just dropped their second straight series to an AL East team. Their streak of series wins has come to an end. They lost 4 in a row. They got swept by the Jays at home, which is always brutal, but apparently that hadn't happened since like 1986, which is insane. And then they just dropped 2 of 3 to the Yankees in honestly a really excruciating series. The first game was over fairly quickly. The second two games were very close. The third game decided by an inevitable Aaron Judge dinger. They almost escaped the 3-game set without giving up damage to Aaron Judge. But no, he's inevitable. He's really good. He hit one like 117, 444, real casual. And so they lose that one 3-2 after winning 2-1 in extras in the 11th. They have an off day when this is coming out. And I don't know exactly what the standings will look like when this comes out. I'm recording this before a couple other AL West teams actually play or their games are going to finish Wednesday night. But the Mariners, no matter what happens, will be at least a half game ahead of the Athletics, maybe 1.5. If they lose, depends. So no matter what, entering Thursday, they will still be in first by at the very least half a game with a plus 11 run differential, which is the second best in the division to the Astros. The Rangers have a negative 5, and they're 22-21. The A's are 22-20 right now and have a negative 28 run differential. They're outperforming their expected win loss pretty damn significantly for this early in the season. And the Angels have a run differential of negative 63 because they're really bad and they're probably going to get last in the division like I predicted, like a lot of people predicted. But the Mariners are in the danger zone. Why? I mean, some of the fairy dust has been wash off of this offense. I mean, Jorge Polanco is under 200 WRC plus now. He's still hitting well. Obviously, that's still going to continue to come down. I don't think he's going to hit like that all year, but still looks great. And then the magic of the bottom of the order, really. I mean, Leo Rivas still has a 155 WRC plus, but he just like doesn't get played anymore. And I said today on the internet, I was like, to stave off his inevitable regression, they just don't play him. So it looks like he's raking every day because he's not playing. So his 55% above league average weighted runs created is looking real good after just not playing. Odd. Very odd. But Julio has looked pretty damn good in May. He really is noticeably cut down on the strikeouts. He has 7 home runs on the year now. Looks phenomenal in the outfield still. JP still looks good. Randy still looks good. Cal looks great. Doing more. Good player. It's this, the like Rowdy Tellez still is just like probably a 90 WRC plus guy, seems like. Ben Williamson has really, really cratered back down to earth. Master Bione doesn't look good. Leody Taveras has not been great in the very short stint on this team since getting claimed, which I did like that claim, and this is the first pod since claiming him. I did like the claim. We'll see where it goes. He can play the outfield pretty well and run the bases. I don't know. If the Mariners can't fix his bat at the plate, there's really not a whole lot of risk in assuming his contract, which is like one Donovan Solano's worth of money. And then Donovan Solano still has a WRC plus of below zero, negative 15. I actually can't believe he's still on the team. Tyler Locklear isn't really hitting like amazing in AAA, but at some point, I think you just have to do it. And then the danger zone continues with the pitching. The pitching has really been touched up this month. Brian Wood has had a phenomenal start against the Yankees, bouncing back off of his worst start of the year, which wasn't even that bad of a start. He's still been the Mariners' best pitcher all year. Kirby and Logan still hurt, still, like, the outlook is good for both of them, but they're both still out, which is unhelpful. Luis Castillo still is chugging along just fine. Emerson Hancock got destroyed by the Yankees the other day, and it looks like, yeah, I don't know if he's good. I'm back in the, hey, maybe he's not good camp. I don't think I ever thought he was great. Logan Evans at least is fine. I think I like Logan Evans on this team more than I like Emerson Hancock on this team. And then Bryce Miller has just been wildly disappointing this season, not missing a whole lot of bats. The command has been off for a guy that was kind of his biggest Achilles heel coming up as a prospect, who really corralled it pretty damn well last season, has looked noticeably worse command-wise this year. And there's been like little smatterings of like his back has been hurting. He hasn't felt like himself all year. He just hit the IL with elbow inflammation, which is something, I guess. I don't think it's real. I don't really, like, there's no UCL concern here. It's like the different, it's like not the part of the arm where UCL would be causing this inflammation. I don't think this is a legit injury. I think this is just a phantom, you need to rest IL stint. He's, like I said, his back's apparently bothering him, I guess. So just get 15 days of rest and recovery. He'll be back exactly when those 15 days are up. You know, throw a little bit in those 15 days, rest, go in the cryo tank, do whatever LeBron does to his body, chillax. A team really needed him to be good. Like, it's brutal that he hasn't been good. The team has needed him to be good since Kirby and Logan have been hurt. He hasn't been, just not looking very competitive up there. It's not even that he's looked bad. He's looked fine at times. It's clear the command is wavering. I talked about that in the last pod. If he can't locate that fastball at the top of the zone, he's not going to have a good time. And just hasn't looked particularly competitive at points, especially getting through like the second and third time through the order routinely. So not ideal, not pressing the panic button yet. It just, this was my main worry with this baseball team heading into the season, was the lack of verifiably okay pitching depth, which, to be fair, up until this point has been fine. It was definitely fine enough in April when the offense was cooking, but it's noticeable when the offense is back home scoring 2 and 3 runs a game in Seattle. Very noticeable when the pitching isn't as good in those situations. It's hard to ignore. My main worry was this, the amount of miles these guys have had on their arms the past couple seasons, whether it be luck, whether it be something the Mariners are doing, every pitcher gets hurt. I was worried that if there were injuries, it would look ugly for this team, and it's looked a little ugly in May so far, and they're in the freaking danger zone, as I've said. So not great. So Jonathan Diaz is up with the team, which is very funny, because I am going to be in San Diego on Friday and Saturday to watch these Seattle Mariners. I'm catching them at a great time. They're 3 of their last 10 wins, and I'm going to see Logan Evans and Jonathan Diaz pitch against the Padres lineup this weekend. Cool. Very, very good. They have been absolutely raking in the month of May thus far. The Mariners have not exactly been raking. They have not been playing good baseball in May at all, really. They started off the month hot. Past week has been bad. I'm not overreacting. I'm just saying, danger zone. They're on the highway to it. I can't believe this professional baseball team is still late in games, pinch hitting Miles Mastropiono, Donovan Solano, even Rowdy Tellez. Like, it's just bad. It's just very bad news. And Ben Williamson, like I said, is just, he's not clearing the bar of like 600 to 650 OPS. And the defensive numbers, I don't want, it's still so early in the year and those are so funky sometimes, but those haven't looked good. And if he's not going to be like a darling grading out elite defensive third baseman, like with outs above average and defensive runs saved and stuff, he's not worth rostering if he's going to hit like this. Because the worry was there's no power. It's so clear with his approach, there really isn't much power. It's a lot of line drive, a lot of reliance on batted balls. And he doesn't walk much, which also doesn't really help. He strikes out a little bit more than league average. It's worrisome because they don't really have anyone else to play third base. I don't want Dylan Moore playing there full time. Leo Rivas can probably play third base, but I don't know what that looks like. I can't imagine he'd be better defensively than Ben Williamson. Ben Williamson, eye test wise defensively, I will say, has looked like a good defensive third baseman. I don't know what's feeding into the negative numbers right now. That's why I'm not going to focus too heavily on it. But he needs to have the OPS line of like close-ish to league average, maybe a little bit worse, and be an elite defensive third baseman to be rosterable. If he's just going to be a fine defensive third baseman and be 25% below league average at the plate, not worth rostering for a team that's trying to win baseball games every day. But Dylan Moore, I don't want playing there every day. Rivas, again, I don't know what that's going to look like. Polanco looked tragic at third base, and I don't want to mess with what's going on right now. Him playing DH and playing second base twice a week clearly is working. So Mastropiono can play third base. I don't think he deserves to be on this team. So what do you do? Like, Ryan Bliss is hurt. He's the only other guy who you could theoretically convince me should be the third baseman if he was healthy, because he at least offers some prospect upside that, like, Mastropiono doesn't. Tyler Locklear is not going to be. He's played third base in the past. I think he was drafted as a third baseman. He's not going to play third base. Are they just going to do it and call up Cole Young to play third base? Because he also hasn't really been lighting the world on fire in AAA recently. As the past week has been great for him. It's bleak. The corners with this team, the biggest concern on offense, you know, it was this and the pitching depth was the corner infield spots. And lo and behold, they've been awful. Like, I guess you try Austin Shenton. Sure. It's so bleak. I don't even know if Cole Young has played third base in his life. I mean, he's drafted as a shortstop, can play second. I'm sure he can play third. I don't know if it'd be good. The way this is going, barring some kind of crazy resurgence from Ben Williamson, Donovan Solano, and Rowdy Tellez combined, they're going to need, they being the front office, they're going to need to pounce on the trade market like hyenas sooner than every other team. Like, who's going to even be available is the problem. because the Cardinals have been winning baseball games. Like, if they wanted Nolan Arenado right now, I don't think the Cardinals are trading Nolan Arenado. There's going to be some corner bats available, I'm sure. The way this is looking, they have to get the best first or third baseman available that hits the market at some point before the trade deadline. That's just what's going to have to happen. And this is completely the fault of how this team was built. And it's not surprising at all. It's not shocking that this is the case. This is not unpredictable that they're in the danger zone, you know? But it's not all bad. Matt Brash is back. He dismantled Aaron Judge the other night. He's starting to look. I think that appearance, which was, what, his third since coming back from the IL, and he really looked like he was coming back from the IL. Like, he didn't look sharp. Not shocking that he didn't look sharp, just didn't look sharp. Tuesday night, he looked the most Matt Brashy that he's looked all season, which is phenomenal and very encouraging. We love to see that. Munoz, we thought, had given up an earned run last night, but it was changed. Still has a 0 ERA. And then Brian Wu, I had written down. That's all I wrote, Brian Wu. Brian Wu is so damn good. I mean, I touched on him briefly earlier. Touched on him, didn't touch him, all right? His strategy continues to be the same, and I tweeted out when he has a great outing, which is pretty often these days, that he just is like, try and hit my fastball, dude. Try it. I'm going to throw my fastball at the top of the zone probably half the time tonight. Try to hit it. Guys can't. They simply cannot. It's one of the most whiffed on fastballs among starters in baseball, among all pitchers in baseball, actually. I mean, his whiff rate, I think, on his fastball is fourth best right now among starters and 11th or 12th overall when you factor in relief pitchers, which is astounding. It's a special pitch, and his location, like, he has looked, I don't know if it's recency bias, but I feel like he's looked noticeably more confident. More, I can kind of put this wherever I want. Most of his pitches, like, I think his secondary command has looked great, especially against the Yankees the other night. Like, that sweeper, that's what can really harm him, is him, he leaves that cutter or sweeper or changeup and it touches too much of the plate. He gets bombed. As fastball touches too much of the plate, usually it's fine. Guys will swing and miss. They take his sinker a lot. He doesn't get a lot of whiff on it, but it gets a lot of strike calls. His fastball, again, it gets a lot of soft contact if guys even make contact with it, or they get under it softly for a little soft flat ball, which is most of the time an out. Where he can really get hurt is those secondaries touching too much of the plate. And I feel like he's been noticeably better about leaving those off the plate more, getting more swing and miss on the sweeper, and locating his cutter on the outer half of the plate a lot better against right-handed pitching or right-handed hitters. Just been so damn good all year. I think, like, he's a legit Cy Young candidate right now. Not crazy to say. I mean, he has a 2.41 ERA. I think he has a 0.5 ERA at home so far this year in I think three starts. Wait, he does. That's not his ERA. Hold on. I was looking at the wrong split. What is his ERA? FanGraphs, what are you doing? 2.84 ERA and 50 innings pitched. 2.69 FIP. Yeah, that is a Cy Young candidate. Now, is anyone going to beat Tarek Skubal in the American League for Cy Young? Probably not. If Tarek Skubal throws anywhere close to 200 innings, he's probably coming home with it. But the awards don't matter to how valuable you are to your team. And he's been so valuable. It's him and Luis Castillo holding down the fort, just waiting for reinforcements. Kirby's looked good in his rehab. I think he's close. Logan's been throwing baseballs. But Brian Wu, it's just special. It's just a special fastball. And the fact that those secondaries have looked that good is definitely a key part to why he's been this effective this year. He's a quality start machine. Quality start machine because he lives in the zone too. He gets a lot of swing and miss, especially like fastball out of the zone up top. But he gets a lot of contact because he just lives in the zone. He doesn't like walking guys. So much soft contact. Can work pretty consistently deep into ball games. Like, he's been working into the seventh pretty routinely this season, which is so helpful when you're mixing in starts from Logan Evans and Emerson Hancock and Jonathan Diaz. Very helpful for having a starter to do that, especially in this day and age of ball. So that's been good with the team. But again, they're trending in the wrong direction offensively. And when everything was going great with the bottom of this lineup, it was like, cool, this is great. But that's kind of all they have. Like, again, they have Cole Young and Harry Ford. They haven't been like amazing in AAA. Tyler Locklear too. I'm just so not confident in those guys making an impact right away when they get called up, that when these guys at the bottom of the order stop producing, like, not shockingly, it's hard to say it's going to get better. I can't say with confidence that it will get better. So it's tough. It's tough. Keeping this one short, midweek, shorty little pod. Like I said, I'm going to be in San Diego next weekend or this weekend. And this is the start of a very long road trip. They go San Diego, then the White Sox, and then four against the Astros before coming home. It's after these two series, they need to take at least one from the Padres in San Diego, and then they really just need to sweep the White Sox midweek. That's just something that's going to need to happen. But the White Sox are not the worst team in the league. Now, they're not good. They're not good, but they're not the worst. And then hopefully, I still don't think there's a timetable necessarily, but hopefully maybe Kirby joins them later in this road trip or rejoins them back home on the 27th. We'll see. The team desperately needs him back and pitching like George Kirby. They could really use that. That'd be a real pickup. But enough about Mariners baseball on the field. Let's talk about Kirk Cousins for a second. I don't know if any of you saw this. Kirk Cousins was seemingly at the Mariners game on Tuesday night. There was a picture I saw on Twitter, and it didn't look fake. I'm a young person. I have a decent eye for when things look fake. It was this dude taking a selfie in what looked like just on like the concourse with what looked exactly like Kirk Cousins. Was it Kirk Cousins? If it wasn't Kirk Cousins, if you don't know who Kirk Cousins is, quarterback, football player, legendary bag getter, maybe the best of all time. But if this guy wasn't Kirk Cousins, it was the most someone has ever looked like Kirk Cousins ever. And when you see him at a Mariners game, it doesn't really make any sense. It begs a lot of questions. I ran through a lot of scenarios in my head of why he might be there. The Seahawks just paid Sam Darnold, so no. There's no chance they just like acquired him and he was at the Mariners game. That would also be real weird. So that doesn't make sense. And they just drafted a quarterback, so again, doesn't make any sense at all for them to do that. Not on the Seahawks. Is he friends with Sam Darnold? Maybe. Even so, I think Sam Darnold was at the Monday night game and not the Tuesday night game. And they would be in a suite and not just walking around the concourse. And Sam Darnold, again, wasn't at that game. So it would be weird if Kirk Cousins was at the game after his friend Sam Darnold was at the game. So that doesn't really make sense. The other through line, he shares a quarterback room with Michael Penix, who was the quarterback at UW and is now on the Falcons with Kirk Cousins. But also, Michael Penix wasn't at the Mariners game last night, at least to my knowledge. I tried to look this up. He wasn't there. I know Michael Penix has been to Mariners games in the past, but he definitely wasn't there last night. So that doesn't make any sense. Does Kirk Cousins have family in Seattle? No. Not that I know of. And the only other thing that came to mind, which would make the most sense, is Jake Cousins, is Kirk Cousins' cousin, which is crazy. He's on the Yankees, but he's on the 60-day IL, so he's not even playing. And if Jake Cousins was playing in this game, if he was in the bullpen healthy, Kirk Cousins was wearing Mariners gear. So was it Kirk Cousins? I swear to God it was. If it's not Kirk Cousins, it is the most doppelganger Kirk Cousins I've ever seen in my entire life. None of it makes sense. He wouldn't be like vacationing in Seattle in May and go to a Mariners game, right? Would that make any sense? No. I just don't know. I was baffled by that. I saw that picture and it made no sense to me at all. It really made no sense. There's like no ties between Kirk Cousins and Seattle or the Mariners at all. Like, if Jake Cousins was on the Mariners, sure. The only tie closely is Michael Penix. And Michael Penix is from Seattle. He just went to UW and lit the world on fire for a season. I don't know. I want to talk about this because I was going crazy last night trying to figure out why Kirk Cousins would be at a Mariners game. And I've seen no one else really talk about this. So the person who posted this photo, I demand you come forward with further evidence that this was, in fact, Kirk Cousins. And did you ask him? Did you ask him why he was at the Mariners game? I'm pulling up the tweet. You can't see this. This is great podcast fodder. Everyone is just wondering in these comments why people are saying his cousin Jake plays for the Yankees but is on the 60-day IL. No clue if he's traveling with the team. Why would he be in Mariners gear? I say it again. If he was in Mariners gear, it makes no sense. It just makes no sense. I'm just rambling about Kirk Cousins at this point, but God, I was so confused. I think I'm going to end the Kirk Cousins segment of the Seattle Mariners podcast by saying he wasn't at the Mariners game. That wasn't Kirk Cousins. It was just a guy who looked so, so much like Kirk Cousins, and not just in the way that a lot of white dudes look the same, which is true, but no, spitting image of Kirk Cousins. So I don't know. Maybe he's one of the Cousinses. Maybe he's also a Jake Cousins cousin. Who knows? I'll end this episode by saying, why did baseball and Rob Manfred specifically reinstate all of the Black Sox cheaters, including probably the most famous one, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and Pete Rose, posthumously? It is beyond me why he felt he needed to do this, other than our current president said he should. And like, what does Manfred get out of bending his will to our current president? Like, I guess political favor. Sure. It is beyond me. The Black Sox players, sure, I guess, whatever. They cheated. They had one knock against them. It's probably the most famous scandal in the history of baseball if you're talking about like a more isolated incident. The steroid era was an era. I guess it was a scandal, but it went on for so long and it was so well known. I'm not calling it a scandal. The Black Sox was a isolated to one series of games incident and scandal that marred baseball. and it's been talked about for 100 years now. But then, sure, reinstate them, whatever, who cares? Pete Rose, like, really? I think if Pete Rose was alive right now, they wouldn't have reinstated him. It's easier for them to just do it now that he's died. Because can you imagine? He was such a scummy, scummy dude. Can you imagine how awful it would be if he was alive and they reinstated him? How obnoxious he would be about this? Well, the thing is, it gives him an avenue to potentially make the Hall of Fame. Not a shoo-in by any means at all. Obviously, he can't be voted in by the normal ballot. That has passed. He has to go in by one of the couple committees that they can elect guys with, like they did recently with Fred McGriff. They did with, like, Harold Baines and Alan Trammell a few years ago. Like, there's those committees that they can elect people after they've been off the ballot. And he'll be on one of those. It'll be up for debate with one of these panels to vote him into the Hall of Fame posthumously. And a lot of people think, sure, he should be a Hall of Famer. The hit king of Major League Baseball, not the hit king of baseball. Ichiro is the hit king of all of baseball. But the most hits in Major League Baseball, obviously on the field, insane impact on the game of baseball. Hard, you can't really tell the story of Pete Rose, or of baseball without Pete Rose. Now, he hadn't made the Hall of Fame because of his cheating and getting barred from baseball. Gambled on baseball and multiple. I think he broke this rule multiple times. And also just a bad person. Like, just not a good person. Notably, a pedophile. So that also, I don't think, was getting him into the Hall of Fame. So if they elect him now posthumously, it's going to be terrible. It's one thing if you cheat in the sport of baseball. If you cheat in the sport of baseball, I still think you should maybe be in the Hall of Fame. If Pete Rose was, like, just kind of a quiet dude later in his career and had gambled on baseball and then got reinstated and elected to the Hall of Fame as the MLB Hits King, sure, I'd be fine with that. Whatever. I'm more on the side of it's a museum. Put the guys in, especially in the context of steroid guys. It's more complicated than that with the steroid guys, but no. So, like, if you cheat, if you gamble on baseball, if you take steroids, you're not getting into the Hall of Fame. And then also, Pete Rose is a pedophile and just a guy that, like, nobody really likes. Like, maybe Curt Schilling likes him. But I think Johnny Bench has even said that he doesn't think Pete Rose belongs in the Hall of Fame because he doesn't like him and he broke the rules and he's a pedophile. So if he gets in now, the fact that baseball reinstated him baffles me. It baffles me. And today, Wednesday, the Reds are tweeting things like, oh, we're wearing 14 today to honor Pete Rose. Does anyone care that he testified and said, oh, I thought that girl was actually 16, not 14 or 15 like she really was? Do people not care about that? A lot of people care, okay? The entities at play here, the Reds and baseball, do they care? I guess not. This is going to be a huge story, big point of contention. He's going to be up for these committees to go to the Hall of Fame. Again, I am a pro Bonds, I am a pro Clemens Hall of Fame guy. But then, like, it gets to, like, Curt Schilling. And again, it's hard to tell a story of baseball without Curt Schilling coming up. At least once, you know. But Curt Schilling is an awful human being, and I don't want anything good happening in his life. So him standing up there happy to be in the Hall of Fame and giving a speech about it, I don't want to see that. And I can't imagine how weird and awkward it would be for, like, who would get Pete Rose's family to give the speech if he got elected to the Hall of Fame? Like, ignore the cheating he did in baseball and how, like, a lot of people, his peers have said he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame and we don't like that guy. And also, you know, he was a pedophile. Can you imagine how awkward this would be? This would be a weird thing on Manfred's legacy. If he, like, Manfred might retire in 2020 after 2028, I think, when his contract is up. Can you imagine this weird little stain at the end of his commissionership? It would be so odd. I just don't know why they did it. I don't see the purpose of this for him specifically. I just really don't. It's also even more relevant now with how much gambling is in sports. Like, if we're just going to focus on the gambling portion of why he was barred for baseball because of the gambling, it's even wilder to me to do this now with the rampant amount of sports gambling that is marketed towards us while we watch all sports and baseball specifically. And it's just crazy to do this because the president was like, hey, you should do it, man. Pete Rose of all people, it's crazy. Shoeless Joe, screw it. Throw him into the Hall of Fame. Have a Black Sox section of Cooperstown. You know, I've always said have a steroid era section. I've never been to Cooperstown. I don't know if maybe they do have a Black Sox section, but make it even bigger with plaques for all the players with little asterisks. I'm pro doing that for the steroid guys. Like, put Bonds with a plaque in the steroid era wing of the Hall of Fame next to Bud Selig, who's already in the Hall of Fame, by the way. And put, like, yeah, this was the best hitter in the era where steroids were ostensibly legal. And this was the best hitter in an era of guys putting up the best numbers in the history of baseball. And then also Roger Clemens and all other guys maybe who weren't elected to the Hall of Fame because of steroids. It's crazy to me to pick and I don't know. He's not in the Hall of Fame. It's not like they elected him to the Hall of Fame. I just don't see the point of doing this now of all times at all. And that's why my point is if he was alive, I don't think they'd do this. It's easier for them, I think, to do it now that he's dead. Because they don't risk him like saying any stupid shit when he's asked about it. So there's that. And I'm going to end the podcast there on a real high note. So I hope I see some good Mariners games in San Diego. But I'll be back in a week or two with hopefully in a jollier mood about Mariners baseball. Hopefully they've turned it around. Hopefully Kirby is back. Hopefully Logan's looking good. We'll see. But of course, I hope you have a great rest of your week and weekend. And of course, go Mariners.